I'm doing well.
Wonderful.
That's the first time I've heard the recording in progress and had the little thing come up.
Really?
I heard the re yeah, they I knew they added the recording in progress part.
Because people were just recording without their permission.
Mine actually automatically records, so
Oh, sweet.
it's probably one of those that, you know. But I, you know, if it's somebody coming in that I don't want to record it, I turn it off. But.
Right. Yeah, for me, I do a game. I come in like 15 minutes early, so it'd be a bad idea to record for just 15 minutes and nothing.
I have unlimited cloud recording, so it.
Ooh, did you pay for the yearly subscription for it?
I have a backdoor to a really cool place to get a really better price on that.
Okay.
There you go. In the chat. Workinglive.us. It is the basically we figured it out. It's approximately the $85 a month version for 155 a year.
That's actually really fair.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out after this.
Yeah. I found it via actually I found it was a membership perk from a group that I'm in called Be Connected,
Okay.
which actually is a networking group. And if you are a member of Be Connected, you can get that Working Live package for that price. Well, come to find out, if people just go to the Working Live page, they can actually get it too.
No.
Not to say that Be Connected's not a good way to do it,
Right.
because there are other benefits that they have, so. Anyway,
Anyways.
so I can't remember. I'm trying to remember where I found your podcast.
It's
To
probably
request,
Matchmaker.
I think it was Matchmaker. I think it was Matchmaker. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a
So, go ahead.
I would
Go
say that's
ahead.
really got a lot of my guesses off there.
And I don't have a current podcast out. I have a previous one, and I'm going to be starting a new podcast here in probably in the next 6 months or so. To get back into the other seat for myself, but for now I'm building other things, so.
What's the what for the podcast? What are you thinking of doing? Like the niche, the market for you?
So I have fully embraced what people call me, which is technology therapist.
Okay.
It happen I do happen to be a therapist by education, past 25 years worth of trade. I'm a clinical social worker.
Wow.
But I have been a geek girl for longer than that, 40 plus years. I'm just gonna call it 40 plus. It's probably closer to 45, but yeah, anyway. And so my company, Bryuka Enterprises, a lot of the things we focus on is helping people increase their productivity by using technology or helping them build their technology foundation for business. Because many people will get into programs and they'll, one coach will tell them you have to use this program, another coach will tell them you have to use this program. By the time they get to us, they've got 16 different subscriptions to things that overlap each other, and they don't really need all of it, and we can slim it down and also make it work for them because they tell them get this software, but they don't help them figure out how to get it to connect with whatever else they have. Or to get everything to work smoothly. So we don't care which software you're in, but we will help you get that technology foundation to work for your opt-ins and your funnels and your web pages and whatever it is you're needing. So that's what Done For You Concierge, which is one of my subsidiary companies, if you will. That's what
Okay.
they do. So technology, productivity, and self-care. Because I'm a therapist, the idea is get more done, less time, so that you can spend time doing this and being human.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the biggest one I've noticed. Just observing people is they're so busy, but they're not. It's they're so distracted with so many things that they can forget to be productive or even take care of themselves.
Right. So that's kind of my, you know, if you get underneath it, that's the why that I do what I do, is to help people, because sleep, self-care, stress, and I had a fourth one not long ago because it was, sleep, self-care, stress, and stigma. So stigma about mental health. They were the four top mental health, or the four of the top public health issues in this country before COVID. Mm-hmm. And now because of COVID, they are probably worse.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't have the data on that because we're busy, obviously, but the silent killers, I call them the silent things underneath all of our health problems, are really those four things.
And it's that, as I've talked to different people in my own personal study and journey, I've realized like anxiety is a major killer of people.
Huge. And 3 out of 4 adults at some time in their life have suffered from it. Mm-hmm. It depression or something similar. I would actually say that of Americans, probably 90% of people have suffered at some point in their life from a mental health disorder, whether it was diagnosed or not.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's the stigma that keeps us from doing anything. And I'm kind of hoping that COVID, one of the gifts it's brought us is to crack open that stigma a little bit where we really can talk about it. You know, we can talk about things, you know, I mean, we talked about it slightly when Robin Williams died because of how he passed.
Right.
We've talked about it with different celebrities and things they've gone through, but that's like, oh, well, that's them, right? This is more of a larger scope that people are like, it's like, you can't deny how many people dying of COVID, right? You can't deny the stressors that it has brought because we're all in it.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's not like you can say, oh, well, that's just with those people. No, it has the potential for all of us, and it has impacted all of us in different ways.
Yeah. So. And it's one of those, as I've talked to different people, I tell them, like, originally, like, anxiety was good for us back in the days when we were, like, being chased by saber-toothed tigers.
Yeah, it was kind of important.
I said, the reason it kicks in is, like, oh, you heard a leaf move, and you immediately... when you assume, oh, it could be this, this, and this. I'm like, well, back then that was important because you didn't know if a freaking coyote was going to kill you, some random squirrel. I'm just looking at your squirrel back there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But you didn't know. So you had to be on edge. But now it's like there's the worst we get in my neighborhood is a coyote hopping the fence because there's no food in the hills. Mm, it's kind of like, mm-hmm. It's not going to kill us. It's like we have a house kind of thing. There's nothing.
No, to be but if you have any little animals outside, I have.
Exactly, yes.
I have friends in Phoenix who have chickens.
Oh, yeah, I had chickens at once, yeah.
The coyotes were kind of a problem for the chickens.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were.
I'm in Missouri, so and I'm in a suburb, and I don't know that they allow chickens in our suburb. I can't remember. I think if you had them already.
Before the rule.
Yeah, and they might actually now. I don't know. A lot more people are, you know, you would think we would be able to sustain ourselves with growing our own food and vegetables, no matter where you live.
Yeah,
you know, the homeowners association mess and all, but
yeah, that's one of those. Because I currently work for a grocery store, and I just see how much food waste. I'm like, it's insane. Pallets and boxes of vegetables, like a week we send out 20 boxes of used vegetables.
And where does it go?
I think they just send it to a composting company.
Why couldn't they send that food to, say, a homeless shelter to offset their costs and be able to have healthier food for people who are in, say, a shelter?
No, that's the biggest thing I talk about too with them. But I even asked my actual boss. I'm that guy that asks questions to authority, and everyone else is like, "You're crazy." I'm like, "Well, okay." But I asked him, like, "Why don't we just like send? Because we have a bunch of meat right now, and I've been tabbing it. That's how my mind works. I keep a tab when it came in and when it leaves. Mm-hmm. It's at its last week, so it's like we have 7 days before this is literally bad, and California won't let us sell it. Why don't we just ship this over to a like a homeless shelter. And the guy literally looked at me, there's no tax credits for it. We don't care.
It has nothing to do with tax credits. It has to do with doing the right thing.
And that's what I told him. I'm like,
if you're going to throw it away,
might as well just,
you're not getting money for it anyway.
You're actually having to pay more for your drivers to take it somewhere else.
Well, and if the place is new, you get a hold of the places around there and go, hey, this Thursday, we're going to have a pickup because Friday, the meat would be, we're not allowed to sell it after Friday,
mm-hmm.
but we can give it to you on Friday. Come exactly. pick it up. They would come pick it up.
And then just be like, grill it within a week so it doesn't go bad, yeah. kind of thing.
Yeah. Use it with, and there are places where that would offset, it's a community partnership that would offset their costs. And maybe they put the grocery store's name on their website and all of their materials. So it's in a way free advertising. So it's not tax credits, but it's advertising. You work out a deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has to do with being proactive and working out the deal. But some places are like, well, we don't want to spend the time.
Well, especially with the COVID buying back in early 2020, where everyone just wiped out all the grocery stores and it showed the weakness of our food chain.
Oh, our supply chains are jacked.
It's still jacked. We're a year and a half later. We can't get half the stuff in.
Yeah. I know that beef here, I mean, and I'm in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have a lot of good beef. We have, you know, but the prices have been going up. You know, we just actually, my mother-in-law and husband and I just decided to order and split part of a beef to put in the freezer. Because if the prices continue going up, we've at least got it in the freezer then, you mm-hmm. know, by buying it in bulk and what have you. And we're thinking of doing the same with part of a pig, but yep. it's, if you're in the Midwest and the prices are going up, the prices have got to be going up on the coasts.
Oh God. Yeah. It's yeah, about, 10,
I mean, you guys have better seafood than we do. mm. Oh yeah. You have, believe me, all we get is maybe salmon. And then we have like if you have from people fishing, it's like lake trout.
Okay.
Or lake fish, you know, which is okay, but it's not near the same thing.
Okay. Well, you know, I know I'm yeah. not a seafood person, so I don't know on that.
Okay. And then the prices are generally better on the coasts for seafood.
It's about $10 a pound for a side of salmon for us.
I'm not sure how much the salmon is. My sister eats more of it than I do. We love going to eat sushi.
Oh, okay.
Have not been able to since COVID. That's the one thing we haven't done. You know, because getting carry out for sushi is just not the same.
No, it's not. You got to sit there. You got to enjoy it. It's a total event thing.
Yeah. So we actually last Friday night, first time we went and had dinner at the place for the most part. And the last two Friday nights, we went and had barbecue one night. This past Friday, we had Japanese teppanyaki style.
Ooh.
Like hibachi.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only is the first time we go out and eat in a room with strangers, but we ate at the table with strangers we didn't know without masks. So I just figured we went all out, you know, and actually we could have gotten sushi that night, but it's not my favorite place to get it. And the gal forgot to bring us the sushi menu. So they lost out. I'm like, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So, but you know, it's so strange to like, One second it felt normal, mm-hmm. and the next second I'm going, wow, this is weird. Being with, you know what I mean? It's a surreal feeling. You guys are still locked down now in California?
Sort of. Now it's like you can move freely, you can go to the gym, but just wear a mask kind of thing. There's this arbitrary June 15th, so the COVID's over, you can just back to normal.
Wow. Yeah, see, we've gone to... In our area, they took the mandatory masking down in the county that I'm in.
Okay.
Except you're supposed to, if you've not been vaccinated, you're supposed to mask.
How do we know that? That's my biggest question.
The people who aren't going to vaccinate are not going to tell you they're not vaccinated because they didn't want to mask and weren't masking to begin with.
Exactly. No, that was the biggest thing for LA. Well, California, they're like, oh, if you're vaccinated, you're free to walk around. And this now I'm like, yeah, what are we supposed to do? Like tattoo on our forehead, COVID-19 vaccinated, like thumbs up kind of thing.
This would have been better or something.
Right.
It would have been better had they put a tracker in the vaccines, but then people would have been all up in whatever about that.
Oh my God, they would have lost their shit.
They would have totally lost it. I'm not against having some form of being able to show, hey, I've got, you know, here's my icon, here's my QR code on my phone that shows I've been vaccinated.
Yeah.
And just swipe it over something or.
I think like New York did something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but, I think, you know, the whole idea of mandating people to be vaccinated, I do think, I don't know. I mean, I know it gets into some policy things, but frankly, we've had vaccinations that are things like that for years.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the flu shot.
To get into public schooling. Mm-hmm. To get into public schools for years, you had to have certain shots.
Right.
To be in the military and go to certain whatever things, you had to have certain shots.
Yeah, because they would have the strain for whatever region you're going for.
International travel, even. You know, I have a degree in social work, but I also have a degree in public health.
Okay.
I could go forever about public health and mental health and those impacts. Although business wise, I do, the technology piece is the next phase of my life, is helping people be more productive with that. So,
No, that was the biggest thing, actually, just talking on the mental health and the mass and stuff. I go to a coffee shop when I have my days off, support a local business and all that. Mm-hmm. Plus, I've been going there for 14 years. It's like one of those, if I don't go, it's like, what am I doing? But that's the biggest thing, is during all the lockdowns, because he was selling food, he was allowed to stay open kind of thing. And so I was just asking him, like, hey, what do you think, like, the arbitrary June 15th? And he's like, I think us employees are still going to have to wear a mask kind of thing. He's like, but there's too much damage done. He's like, there are people freaking out. He's like, if you come back at 8 o'clock, you will hear people freaking out in the hallway that no one has masks on. And I'm like, what they're doing? They're literally drinking coffee. How are they supposed to drink through a mask kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
When he's like, you're right. There's too much damage. They don't. He's like, I think it's going to take longer than a couple months to even this out. I'm like, it could take 2-3 years to fix it.
Oh, well, because we did not deal with COVID immediately,
mm-hmm.
It's not going to ever go away.
Yeah.
We're stuck with it. The idea of getting a booster shot in the fall that people freak out over. It's like, we've had flu shots every fall for how long? It'll be great if they're able to mix it together, but if they can't because it's two different kinds of vaccines, I'd rather, okay, just give me, you know,
you just double tap my shots,
you know, double me up, you know, I would rather, and you know, I do get the variety. There are actual medical reasons where it's not as good of an idea for people to get vaccinated. There are certain people who probably had COVID, who may have other health issues where they're not sure about they should be vaccinated, but they should work closely with their doctor on right, something. Right. But the rest of us, you know, I guess I'm glad I'm vaccinated to take better care of myself and the possibility of me spreading it to people that I love. And the people I love are all vaccinated with a couple of exceptions. And,
This is the biggest thing. I just, in general, I realized how selfish we are in general as humans. So back in December, after the Thanksgiving, at least in California, I don't know if this is national, but everyone decided to gather for Thanksgiving in California kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then there was a huge spike the second week of December.
Yeah. And
that's when we had a whole construction crew, like 100 people come in, and none of them were wearing masks. And actually 20 of them knew they were positive and still came in. And I got it, and sadly I gave it to everyone else, but we all survived, kind of thing. But it was just the, wow, you knew you were infected, yeah. You knew you shouldn't be here, and you still came.
Well, and there, I'm sure there are still laws on the books of if someone is infected with something. I remember when the AIDS crisis started.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone knowingly has an STD, especially something like AIDS, HIV and AIDS,
right,
and they knowingly have unprotected sex with someone and may not even have told them,
okay,
that actually there's now legislation about those kinds of things. You know, you and it's not always to protect ourselves. It's also to protect everybody else.
Right.
You know, the concept, you know, 2 years ago, had I said something about herd immunity, people would have looked at me and going, what? What are you talking about cows for? Well, you know, besides the price of beef. And now everybody thinks they know what it is, but they really don't always know what that really means. You know, and what it means is the number of people in that are vaccinated and or immune for whatever reasons. Reaches a level where the virus is less likely to spread because the level of immunity in the whole population in that area is higher, so it doesn't have anywhere to spread to.
Right. Isn't it like 75% or more?
It's like around 75 or 80% or more. And I don't know if we've reached that tipping point or if we will because of people being hesitant, vaccine hesitant.
A lot of people at my current work have just outright said we're not taking it.
Mm-hmm.
We'd rather get it again and just disappear for 2 weeks than take the vaccine. I'm like,
so is it because they get 2 weeks off?
Yeah, 2 weeks guaranteed.
And you get paid for it?
No, our store, because of the purchasing, the first time you ever get it, you got your 2 weeks paid. But after that, if you get it again, you're on your own. You're guaranteed a job, but you're not guaranteed pay.
Wow. And so it comes down to money instead of their health.
Mm-hmm.
They'd rather get a disease that has the potential to give them lifelong health problems.
Oh, yeah.
That they'll have to pay for largely later.
Mm-hmm.
Than to protect yourself from the disease with a shot that's free.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't want to do it. They're like, nope.
And the hard part there is that it's become political and it really has nothing to do with politics.
Yeah, literally.
Or that's it should have nothing to do with politics.
Yeah. And it's just one of those, I sat there and I'm like, guys, like, because the key word, like, they're guaranteed a job, but they're not guaranteed pay. They're like, I get a free 2 week vacation. I'm like, well, you're paying for it indirectly.
Well, and if you don't get paid, you're paying for it by not being able to pay your bills.
Exactly. I'm like, it's one of those, can you think that through kind of thing?
Well, there would have to be critical thought processes grown. Like, people would have to learn critical thinking in order for that to happen.
I'm going to say, just from your perspective, from your studies also, but also just life experience, do you think people just don't want to critically think anymore? They just rather be told what to do and that's it?
For years, it's been downplayed that critical thinking is an important skill.
Really?
And not, it's not been taught in schools for many years. It's not been, because in some groupings, use of the scientific method and research skills has been, connected with, oh, well, that's just liberals and people who aren't, you know, sometimes it's a fight against between religion and science. Sometimes it's a fight against liberal and conservative, but many, you know, or you don't need a college education. It's just that's those people at the college, liberal colleges. And I think that's where it's gotten downplayed. And then the more it's downplayed, the more people don't learn it. And then the more they don't learn it, then they're not using it. And then it perpetuates itself.
Yeah, it just keeps getting worse and worse. And all my coworkers are like, oh, the rich this. I'm like, they're the ones that actually had a thought and acted on it compared to you, where you had a thought and you watched YouTube instead, which the rich person made so they can make money because they know you won't do anything.
Well, and critical thinking really also comes down to being critical about what resources you use.
That's true.
Because you find something on the internet does not mean it's true. It never has.
No.
Just because you found something in a book, it has never proven, like the word proof, the word because the causation as a concept. If you say X causes Y in the research world, you have to prove that X indeed is the only thing that could cause Y. That's the, the basics of kind of research scenario. And by using, the scientific method and testing your theory of does X cause Y. So literally even saying X happens because of Y in a sentence, if you really get down to it, critical thinking would say, okay, show me the proof that X is the only thing that has been the cause of why.
Yeah.
But then, we don't use that level of thinking.
Right. Yeah. This is what I was thinking. I'm like, we don't actively want to do that because it could be quote unquote work kind of thing. We have to actually think. And it's just like, no, we're good. You just tell us what to do.
Just tell us what it is. Just tell us what to do. I can't prescribe to that.
No.
I grew up in a scenarios where it was okay to, most of the time it was okay to ask questions and okay to learn. And okay to think for yourself. And that's one of the things that's got to be protected. People talk about different constitutional amendments being protected. And they frequently are saying, the First Amendment or the Second Amendment. They don't always talk about the others and what they are and protecting all of the above. One of my favorite amendments is actually the 19th.
I don't remember that offhand. What is that one again?
Women's right to vote. Suffrage.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I have a personal affinity toward it because it was very powerful, one of the very powerful amendments. But just because that's like my favorite to think about, I'm for all of them.
Right.
Those aren't just laws. Those are amendments to the Constitution. They're amendments to the foundation. The reasons they were put up as amendments has to do with them being foundational. The right to free speech is foundational to our democracy. The right to bear arms, as it sits, is foundational. Now, does that mean that we should be able to own a level of gun that can wipe out an entire room in 2 seconds? Maybe, maybe not. Okay. And I realize the gun debate, the various debates go on forever.
Yeah.
But completely taking all arms away from American citizens is not right, any more right than saying those with mental health issues can't have arms. Because really, that's going to cut out about 90% of the population. And that, in fact, many of those who are the ones who are saying they're taking my guns away. It's going to, and so it gets a slippery slope really fast.
It really is. And actually, one of my guests I had on a week or two ago, she was a cop for like London or England. And she was telling me, yeah, for like 6.5 years, she's like, the weirdest thing happened. She's like, there was no gun violence. Literally, we had no guns at all. And she's like, I'm like, oh, okay. She's like, yeah, but there was a lot more sword and knife killings. I'm like, wait, did you guys go back to medieval like England or London where like people are just casually walking claymores? She's like, yeah, literally, you can see a guy with a claymore. It's perfectly normal.
Yeah. Well, they don't allow weapons there. Much of the UK, there you can't carry a gun. Yeah. And so, yeah, there are, you know, violence is violence, mm-hmm. and has existed since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, I don't know that hate is the opposite of love, but for some reason, hate and violence has happened for eon and forever, I'm sure, you know, but so is the opposite side. You right. know, it's so much easier, in my opinion, to be human to each other. And you don't have to like the person to respect them as a right. human being. And really, I'd see, you know, maybe that's the core of, you know, and we've got a lot of hate in this country to work through.
Yes. And it's very vocal now with the internet, too.
On many sides, mm-hmm. and not there are some places that breed hate.
Yes,
with the internet. Absolutely. And then there is such the possibility of growing respect, understanding, and connection between all of us. You know, why don't we use the tools for good? Again, we're back to using the tools for good.
Well, this is the big thing I actually had a debate with my martial arts instructor about, because he's all about his guns. And he's like, why didn't you take my guns away? I'm like, dude, look at it this way. When's the last time a random moose tried to attack you? And he's like, they haven't. I'm like, back when the Constitution was made, they had muskets. They had random bears trying to attack them. They had their neighbors trying to attack them. So yes, guns were important back then. Do you randomly have a neighbor invading you, trying to overtake your house and burn you and kill you? He's like, no, I'm like, you don't need a gun. I said, you're a martial artist anyways. All you need is a stick and you can kill him.
and you know, and it's not that we don't necessarily need some form of protection, you know, and owning guns is a major issue, because I think you can own guns responsibly and be you know, use them for security and not certainly not. There are plenty of people who use them for security and do not ever, the ones who have learned correctly, they don't want to draw that weapon.
No, they don't.
You know, and now what I don't understand is crossing the line over into saying the type of weapon I need is a weapon that I could take out a whole room full of people with.
So, fun fact on this, I used to work for an ammo plant guy. Like, he would make bullets and resell them kind of thing. So we had to test the batch and we would go test. Well, because he's very by the rules, like, actually, I learned more about guns with the month working with him than I've learned with anyone else. Mm-hmm. And essentially, for fun, because it's the weirdest rule in California, a 50 cal bolt action rifle is illegal, but the turret's okay. And I sat there and I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, the bolt action's not allowed, but the turret's okay. And I just sat there. I'm like, did they not think that they're just thinking people are not going to mount a turret to the roof or something like that? He's like, I don't know, but it's the dumbest rule. So he let me shoot one. And it's just one of those, after I got to do it, I was also a twitchy gamer, so it sounded like it was a fully automatic gun. So the ranger came up and we were just telling him, like, yeah, the kid's never literally shot a gun. We're breaking him in today. And he said, well, he tapped me on the shoulder. Just so you know, that gun, because it's from World War II, that killed a lot of people. With just the amount of time you just did that. And that's when it clicked. I'm like, holy crap, he's right. That could have literally taking out like 200 people right there.
Yeah.
So in that case, I told them like, these are fun, but in the right place, right time kind of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, interesting that you said some, you know, about the gaming and, you know, I know that gaming is not a reason necessarily that people use guns. People may use gaming mm-hmm. to relieve stress and, you know, I would say that the majority of people who do that, fully understand that game is not life and that they would never have a weapon and draw it and do anything they would do in a game. I'm not really a gamer per se. I like little games, but I've never been a gamer.
Right.
But there are pieces to gaming that, you know, the gaming culture is interesting in and of itself.
It is.
You know,
it's one of those, actually me and my buddy a couple months ago had a chat about it when we could finally meet up and all that. And I told him, like, you know, if it wasn't for gaming back when I was younger, angry and angsty, I'm like, shit, I wouldn't know where to put my anger kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I said, if we're playing, literally, you can just metaphorically envision you're the one in first person running around, so you could let all your anger out. But you also know at the same time, it's a screen. I ain't actually killing people kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's like,
yeah, I think it's that fine line in that and teaching the way to use it as a tool.
Right.
You were
right.
Using it as an anger management tool.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has viable options there. No different than teaching someone gun safety if they're going to carry a gun.
Oh yeah.
You know, you need to learn how to always like get a hold of it where your hands are not on the trigger. They're, you know, yeah. And how to, always check to make sure that there's nothing in a chamber, even if you know there isn't. You know, this isn't checking the garage door to make sure it's closed or not. This is literally checking to see of whether you or someone else could get harmed or killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the holding that level of respect for the item that you're holding.
Absolutely. Actually, you know, what's funny is one of my martial arts buddy I used to train with, he's been getting a lot of overtime, so I don't see him anymore. But he just got his gun permit, his license, his holster kind of thing. So he wanted to learn how to disarm a gun. So he brought his real one in. We were checking it. But it was one of those, he came in, he didn't even think about it. He pulled the magazine, but he didn't check the chamber. And he barrel handed it to me. And I just literally sat there. Luckily, the instructor was there, so he held me back then, was whooped his ass right there. But then I checked
in. The idea of you should not be able to own a gun unless you have gone through a class on how to.
No, here's the crazy part. He paid thousands of dollars, was trained by a cop and everything. And he still did it. And that's where literally I like took his gun. I cocked it and the bullet popped out. And he's like, oh, I thought I checked it. I'm like, you dumbass. I saw the literal
apparently
barrel.
Apparently you didn't.
I'm like, I saw it in your barrel kind of thing.
This is
where it's one of those. I'm like, dude, literally, this is what you want to be. You want to be a cop. You want to get to do your time. So then you can also start your own security company. That's great. But if you can't handle this, I ain't going to invest in you. I'm like, actually, I might just disown you because it's like you don't know what you're doing.
You need to make better decisions.
Right.
So.
But yeah, that was just the one thing. I'm like, dude, you were trained by the best of the best, like a former former Army turned cop, retired. Now she just trains for income. I'm like, you were trained by the best and you still can't do it.
Did they hear you?
Oh,
did
yeah,
they
heard it. And that's where he now checks it every time. And he also doesn't bring it to the studio because if I see it and it's wrong, he knows I'm going to literally grab the wooden stick. Like I told my instructor, I'm going to whoop his ass.
Well, and maybe he just needed the reminder.
I think that was more it. Because he was like cloud nine.
And from somebody who, from not just from some random person who he's thinking, oh, you're just checking up on me or you're just trying to tell me what to do. It's, hey, you wait a minute. I care about you and you just jacked this up. And I'm not going to back you if you keep jacking it up. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, when people care who care about you, check you on something.
It's important. It really is.
Hopefully it's easier to hear, but...
It also depends on the headspace they're in, too.
Oh, truth. Certainly. So.
So actually, I wanted to be curious about your perspective about how the technology can help us be productive in that manner. Because I was like, well, that's cool. We just went this whole rabbit hole right now.
Right. So there are various ways technology can help us be productive. It's really a combination of technology and mindset.
Okay.
So, some of the pieces are mindset and some of the pieces are which piece of technology do you use for what? So one of the examples is a productivity hack I tell people about is called brain dumping. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Brain dumping. If you think about, and this kind of goes along also with anxiety, you're getting ready to lay down to go to bed. And all of a sudden you think of the 17 things that you hadn't thought about all day that you're needing to, you need to do something. You need to remember, you know, this X, Y, Z thing, or you come up with a great idea. And if you know that if you don't write it down, you're not going to remember it. Mm-hmm. Or you have something going on in your life that you're worried about and that if you don't, that you'll sit there and you'll lay there and worry and you won't get to sleep, or racing thoughts and you can't get to sleep. There's a lot of different reasons. Some of it helps, you know, with insomnia. So what a brain dump is you take a piece, literally you can take a piece of paper and a pen. So you can go from that level of tech up to, you know, voice recording in a transcription program, which is actually one of the ones that I use frequently. I actually have it on my watch and I wear my watch to sleep. So I'll frequently brain dump into a recording program on my watch.
Okay.
Because we do get lots of creative, great ideas when we get laid down and get ready to relax. Right. Mm-hmm. But if you get up out of bed and go to write them down, that will also activate your body and then you're more awake. And you have to start the cycle over again.
Interesting.
With actually, laying down.
Yeah, that's been my biggest problem in general is I'm super creative, but it's usually one of those, the mundane thing, like taking a shower, going to a restroom, sleep, like laying down for like a 10 minute nap. But the moment I get up, it disappears. I'm like, that it's always, I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. I must be like defective. But now it sounds like I'm not.
No, because it's our body's activated again, or, you know, like if you sleep and you go to wake up, your brain has done basically when we're sleeping, it's like a reboot of a computer,
right?
You're rebooting your brain and your brain is your subconscious and your conscious are amalgamating all the things that you've experienced that day. They're putting new memories in place. They're connecting the dots with stuff. And then just kind of relaxing, you know, saving the power so that you can, when you wake up, you know, you've got energy to go on the next thing. So if you brain dump, and literally it can be stream of conscious, doesn't even have to make sense, either words on a paper, drawing. I've used my iPad before and draw the ideas or scratch them out. Most of the time I have trouble typing because of a hand injury. So I'll use my watch. I'll use a recording, but everybody's a little different on how they do it. One of the best things though, is that you do figure out a way to do it so that you don't have to get back up out of bed. Because if you get up, your blood flow gets going, your energy gets going, and you've got to go through the relaxation stage again. So with people with anxiety, sometimes that's harder because they have trouble relaxing in general. Mm-hmm. And so if you get up and then you have to go through that whole relaxed state again, you end up not getting any sleep.
Yeah.
No, and then you end up with like all these. So one of the hacks is brain dump every night. And it takes 21 days to build a habit. Okay. And you really don't want to build many more than two habits at a time, because you really want to program those in hard before you switch and do another habit. So if you figure brain dumping for 21 days to get it built as a habit, then that you just do that every day. So one of the pieces is brain dumping, and some of the technology, it can be from paper up through, you know, using a notes program. You could use Alexa or Google. I don't say her name because she'll answer. You can use whatever, you know, we've got some great technology now to do those things, right? And then the other thing you do is you take, sometimes it's you take out of that brain dump. If you're another time, good time to brain dump is when, say, you're finishing up your work day, if you work for yourself.
Okay.
Whatever time you finish up that work, your work session, and even during your work session, keep a pad of paper on your desk that's literally just for brain dumping. And as you think of things, instead of getting distracted by them, you write them down on the brain dump. And then you just keep working. So you brain dump constantly during the day, or at the end of the day when you're getting ready to wind down, even if it's something you're not going to do for 6 months or you're not whatever, and it doesn't have to be in order, it's dumping what's in here down onto paper or into a file somehow.
Okay.
The second step is you take that, your brain dump in general, or what you know your tasks are for the next day, and you pick the top three. Now, I don't mean three big projects. I mean three tasks. These could be things like, remember to call my doctor for my medicines. Remember to send an email to so-and-so about their podcast. Okay. Remember to, and you know, it could be a small task. It could be write my next week's worth of blog posts. But you don't want it to be write 6 months worth of blog posts. You want to break it down into the tasks. The top three tasks you need to get done in that next day to be considered successful, to consider yourself successful. Now, the reason it's three and small tasks is you make it the most important stuff you've got to get done. Mm-hmm. But once you have those three things done, it starts sets you up for success, because you'll get those three things done and go, okay, I have been successful today. Mm-hmm. You're likely to get 10 mm-hmm. and more tasks done, but those were the three things when you went to bed the night before that you were going to do the next day.
Right.
And that if you get them done, you feel successful, and it just multiplies on itself. So that helps also with confidence levels and decrease in anxiety because of that. And neither of those actually really take a lot of technology, frankly.
No. Notepad and maybe a voice recorder, and that's all you need.
Yeah. Kind of thing. Now, you know, or you can do, you know, your voice recorder, and then you can type in your reminders program or in your calendar, type in your three things of your three tasks. So that way, you know, check, check, check. Once you get them done, then the rest of the day's cake.
Interesting. That, like, I've learned that in the last like 6-ish months of doing this podcast, like have a checklist, have a running thing, just through trial and error. But I didn't realize I was figuring out how my brain in general worked, like how it ticked. That's interesting.
Yeah. You were coming up with what your process is.
Right.
And because you have a process and a checklist, you don't forget the things, and you can prepare for your podcasts ahead of time, or you can, you know, make sure, okay, I need to go through the transcript of my recording and write show notes. I need to, you know, make sure all the links work. I need to, you know, make a graphic for it. I need to make sure that the graphic fits in the different places. I need to set it automatically so it'll post, you know, all the different little pieces and parts. People don't always think about People who haven't done podcasts may not think about
it. Yeah, it's one of those, I joke with people in general. It's like, I love what I'm doing, but technically I'm making it less because of the amount of work involved kind of thing. Compared, I'm like, if I worked a normal 9-to-5, technically I'm making more there, but it's less work. But I love what I do, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's not a money-making thing. It's a you do. So let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I said, what do? You say, well, I'm a podcaster and I, you know, make this much, you know, my podcast has these topics and this is what we do. But the question is really, why do you do the podcasting?
Yes. No, absolutely. And that's the biggest thing. Question. That is the one question, the why no one wants to ask, because that means they have to also face a few things too.
Mm. Could be. And it's why do you do it? Like, I work for myself because I believe in the empowerment that I can gift others.
Right.
And one of my whys also has to do with an experience of why I started working for myself doing technology, as I started by helping my grandpa learn stuff. This is back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I'm driving in between therapy appointments to clients, and I'm on old school flip phones with him, teaching him how to use a Windows computer without one in front of me because I'm driving. Remember, I'm probably on a Bluetooth headset.
In the 90s, did they have that?
Probably one of the early ones or a speaker. I probably had it on speaker, one or the other. Because if I was driving in between and talking to him, I know I had it. I didn't have it where I was. I already understood the safety part of that one. Yeah. But, you know, talking to him in between those things to help him with a computer. And so I had to remember what was on the screen at different points to help him do that. But what the reason was is because he was not able to get out of the house anymore. Mm-hmm. And he needed to be social with his buddies because I knew that if he didn't, he'd get more depressed. So I was using the technology to increase his ability to socialize with his buddies. And I was teaching him how to do it over the telephone.
So actually, I have a side question for you on top of that, because you explained the visuals and how to where everything was. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is normal or not. If you tell me to visualize, I'm just going to use your squirrel in the background to visualize a squirrel. I don't get a high definition picture like that. It's not like a picture just pops up and there's a squirrel. It's more of like a shadowy silhouette kind of thing. Is that quote normal, or is that just means more I'm a different type of learner?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think everybody has different types of learning that they do.
Okay.
Some people, if someone said to me, what does a squirrel sound like? I would have trouble with that. Right, my brother probably, though, he's a musician. He thinks in sound. Mm-hmm. So he'd probably like hit
the perfect note for it.
He'd have like the perfect whatever. Yeah. The perfect timing, the perfect whatever's of it. I think everybody sees, you know, visualizing is also something that that takes practice.
Okay.
As much as it does, you know, like you're going to visualize whatever you've experienced before. So if you've seen squirrels before and you might think of that picture in your head of what a squirrel looks like on the yard.
That's true. Yeah.
But for whatever reason, when somebody brings something up, like if somebody said, visualize a chinchilla.
No, I mean, I've seen it, but I don't have it. It's one of those.
I would have trouble visualizing a chinchilla. Exactly. Yeah, because I think I've only seen a couple pictures of them. Actually, I think some people in my family raised them at one time because they were like the thing is to raise chinchillas. And, you know, but like if somebody brings up something that you don't know is you're not as familiar with, you know, but if someone said visualize a multiplayer. I can't think of the right words, whatever, shooter game.
Yeah. Just go with an online game.
I'm sorry?
Just go with online game.
Yeah, but you know, and so like if somebody said visualize a da 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 game, you could visualize that because you are familiar with the language. You've seen them before. If someone asked me to visualize a VCR.
I haven't seen those in a while.
But I remember my visualization goes back to not only knowing what they looked like, but remembering mine really kind of goes back also to the first time I ever saw one and the first ones we had when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, because I remember when we didn't have one, you know, and the same with a microwave, you know. But how many people, like, have you used a microwave today?
Yes, actually, I have.
Yeah. I have not today, but I did yesterday, you know. I mean, and so when it's something you're familiar with, I think that's a better, something you visualize differently. You're like, oh, yeah, I know what that looks like.
So would that also play into the 21 day of habit building? So if you see it so many times within 21 days, it solidifies kind of thing?
Could be. Yeah. I think the other thing is like if you think of it also goes into setting intentions. So okay. I'm going to slide our topic slightly is when you are setting a goal or an intention for something. If you set that intention and you visualize it every day for 21 days, you have put that visualization of whatever that goal is in your mind. So let's say you write down your goal on a piece of paper and you put it somewhere that you're going to see, like you put it on your computer and you look at it every day and you read it every morning and you read it every day afternoon. Well, it's becoming hardwired into your brain.
Right.
And so let's say the goal is to buy a new red Corvette.
Okay.
All right. So you see that, you see it. All of a sudden on the road, and this is because of a part of our brain called the reticular activating system.
Okay.
You start seeing little red Corvettes everywhere.
Okay.
Because your brain is, and it has to do with... probably on the scientific level, things that we don't know about yet, things that we really haven't proven. It probably also has to do with the fact that of frequencies. And once we start thinking of that, that thought has a frequency and it puts us in the place of the thing that we're looking for. But on the brain level is your brain is thinking of that little red Corvette. And all of a sudden you start seeing what you're thinking of all over the place. And in a way, the universe may bring you will find what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
You will find, say, all of a sudden you're on Facebook and somebody says, does anybody know anybody who wants to buy a little red Corvette?
Mm-hmm.
And your brain, you know, it's like you will see that post instead of all the others around because your brain is already seeing red Corvette. It's right, already... Right. So there are things like that happen. And it happens because in a way the universe, you know, and like I said, I don't think scientifically we haven't completely brought that together yet, but we definitely have that we've learned a lot about our own system in our brain called that reticular activating system. And it will, you can literally kind of change your own brain by using it. Now, if you really want to go meta,
okay,
think about the fact that this machine here can change itself.
Well, that would be NLP, right?
Well, it just in general, thinking about it, it's kind of like that thought when you think of how big of a grain of sand are we compared to the entirety of the universes, the multiverses, the whole everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you really think about the fact that this thing itself can change itself, like this cup cannot change itself into something else.
No, it can't.
Physically, we maybe not able to completely change our appearance and those things, but this thing can change how it operates on its own without any other intervention. Mm-hmm. Because we have the ability to learn whatever it is we want to change this into. You know, we can change our own programming.
So would that also play into the manifesting and law of attraction?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. The especially the reticular activating system, that plays into law of attraction big time.
Interesting. Yeah, that's the one thing. I joke with my martial arts instructor and a couple other people because they have all these negative thoughts. I'm like, just so you know, I'm like, there's no physical proof, but I'm like, thoughts are things. I said, would you say plasma, which is an energy, which we can't, with better technology, we can, but we can't really control plasma. You can't put it in a tube kind of thing. It'll just melt right. The tube. But I'm like, plasma is a thing. And he's like, right. Who's to say our thoughts are not a thing? Because it is technically energy.
Our thoughts have frequency. Everything, right. Everything has frequency. Our thoughts have frequency. And so if you have a negative thought, that negative frequency is being emanated from you out to the rest of the universe.
Right. And that's the thing I told him, because he it's usually the same conversation in one day, but he was like, oh, like they're doing this and it's bad. I'm like, well, why don't you think of the good? Just try something. Don't even bother. Don't even think about that kind of thing. Like, you have customers today. Think about how you can make their day better. I said, in doing that, you're going to make your day better. Mm-hmm. So then he texted me like a day or two later, and he's like, what the hell did you just teach me? Like, what witchcraft is this? I'm like, dude, I'm like, it's just, you are what you think about kind of thing. If you're negative.
And a life of gratitude. Mm-hmm. So think about in the brain dumping, not just brain dumping, but write three things down that you're grateful for that day. Mm-hmm. So you write three things that you want to get done the next day, and you write three things you're grateful for. Well, you're ending the day with gratitude, and you're setting yourself up the next day for success.
Right.
And those both together compound each other into more positivity, more positive vibrations, more positive frequency that you have and that you're putting out into the universe. And if you're putting that out into the universe is going to bring you what you're thinking of.
Yep.
Now, none of that is, like I said, science. We've got some of the, you know, the science is coming closer to the, I really say that science and religion are coming closer and closer to where they eventually will realize that science was created by force, and whatever force can be explained by science as well.
Wasn't science originally intended to prove that God existed, kind of thing? I think that was like an old definition I heard or read somewhere. Like, science was originally intended to prove God existed, but as time went on, they were like, wait, we can do this, but God can't do this kind of thing. So it almost fractured itself.
I would say the Renaissance age and science, you know, I mean, science kind of happened in the sense of us exploring and understanding things. I mean, we were wanting to understand the world around us. You know, you think of Galileo and, mm-hmm. you know, how did he find out the things he found out? Through experience and experimenting with, you know, and observing. And so science came from observation. Well, we've been observing to try and figure out, why do we exist? What brought us here? What's real, you know? And so, yeah, I think the beginnings of what we know as science also have gone outwards maybe, and then are coming back in to, like I said, whatever created us. They created the science part too. Mm-hmm. Science is eventually going to be able to explain how we were created. So it really is one and the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially like one of my guests I had on, he was explaining to me, it was just because he's a project manager, but he tries to keep more of the psychology in mind. And he said, you know, the one thing, and science still can't figure it out, is why we sleep. He's like, there's a book on, he gave me the person.
I read an article recently on that too. I saw an article. I didn't get to read all of it.
But your comment about like we're a computer restarting. And I said, yeah, that's what I had a psychology teacher, crazy French guy. And just randomly in the middle of the lecture, he stops and says, okay, so we just went over sleep. He's like, but why do we sleep? And it was one of those, he expected no one to know the answer. And I just was like, well, it's kind of like a cell phone. You could technically leave it running, but things are going to be glitchy and just do weird stuff and butt dial the police kind of thing.
Yeah.
You just restart it so it doesn't do that. But I'm like, sleep, I would consider that turning off the phone. Like there's no reason to, but it just, it helps.
And maybe doing updates.
Right.
Really, it's almost like when your computer, it's probably even better described by saying when your computer does updates, frequently it has to restart, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have to, if it, you know, it downloads the most, you've been downloading stuff all day into your brain mm-hmm. or with your brain, and that if you don't sleep and do an update, that all of that information and all of your experience doesn't get to connect in where it needs to connect. And ultimately it could be either fractured or it's not quite right. And really it's got to go into that subconscious area of our brain.
It does. And that was the biggest thing after the crazy French guy was talking to me and he's like, well, what evidence do you have? I'm like, well, like you said, we don't have proof, but it makes the most logical sense. That's what we have to do. And the project manager was telling me, he's like, you know, if you're actually having trouble before a test, he's like, study hard for like 2 hours, just insane, but take a 2 hour nap. He's like, everything you learned will sink in your subconscious and you'll remember mm-hmm. it. He's like, this whole 24-hour, 48-hour binging, he's like, it's not going to work because you didn't sleep during all that.
Yeah, that's actually what I – so that brings us actually right back around to self-care. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I teach my – I've taught graduate school for 10 years and that I teach my students, one of the first lessons, things I ask them is when is your next appointment with yourself?
Interesting.
So if I just asked you, Josh, when is your next appointment with yourself? What would you say?
In about 3 hours when I go to sleep.
Okay. So it's sleep. What else would be an appointment with yourself?
Working out, showering, eating, just casual walks.
Okay. Eating is something you have to do. Sleep is something you have to do. Casual walks. That's something,
Wow, that's a good point. We put it like that. I don't have much planned then for myself.
So I'm talking about self-care in the sense of not just taking care of your body, the things we have to do. I'm talking about what things do you do for you. Now, I'm going to say your gaming is probably one of your self-cares. Possibly.
Yeah. There's more podcasting now. But yeah, gaming yeah. would have been one of them.
So, you know, and our self-care things change. So I encourage people to create a menu of self-care. From things that take a few minutes to things that take longer, so that any time you can go, I need to make sure and do at least two or three things that I can do in 2 or 3 minutes every day for self-care. What can those be? Mm-hmm. It could be setting a timer for 3 times a day to do a meditation minute and literally just stop and breathe. It could be setting a timer to remind yourself to stand up and go for a walk outside, because being outside is absorbing whatever for your self-care. It could be cuddling with your dog. So everything on up to, so every day we need to have at least 2 or 3 very small things. We need to have at least 15 minutes a day.
Okay.
For self-care for ourselves. We need at least a couple hours every week. And then every month or so, we need a day or two of self-care, at least.
That's interesting. Actually, that's how I've been thinking. Like back in 2020 in October, I went to on a vacation with my dad. But literally, I didn't go on vacation all year. So I was like, oh, this is great. I sat there. I'm like, you know, instead of like taking a week off, why don't I just take 2 days, maybe 3 to, wow, I'm just throwing everything today. Why don't I take like 2 or 3 days, like every 3 months, like every quarter kind of thing. So I'm not being obnoxious to my boss, but I'm also like, I'm getting away from everything.
And that maybe once a year, you still take a week. You may not take 2 weeks, but you take one full week or mm-hmm. closer to a full week once a year. Then you take a couple days here and there. You take like a Friday. So you have a 3-day weekend.
Right.
or you take a, you know, I mean, that's classic good use of, you know, budgeting your vacation time versus whatever.
Right.
And so having that menu of self-care, asking when is your next appointment with yourself, and putting into place, again, we're back to the 21 days too, of mm-hmm. making sure you put 21 days worth of, you know, like, so you make the menu out, and for 21 days, you say, I'm going to do at least 15 minutes of self-care every day for 21 days. That's a heck of a, that's actually a big goal.
It is.
But it is, it's those little times where you reset yourself. So I'll go back to the story of when is your next appointment with yourself? But students I taught had frequently have a large test they have to take in order to become a therapist. So they sit down for, like doctors have state boards, we have board exams that we have to take to get the different levels of licensure we have. And frequently there's at least two board exams you have to take. These are 4-hour long, multiple choice, not necessarily the easiest tests in the world over a large amount of material. Mm-hmm. So you study for weeks and you learn test taking strategies as well. But when I'm working with somebody to help them prepare, I say, so if let's say your test is on Friday, mm-hmm. you take Thursday completely off everything, no work, no studying, no major, I got to go get this task done, this task done, this task done. You take a full day of self-care the day before. The night before that, so now we're back to, so that's Friday, then Thursday, Wednesday night, when you go to sleep, that's the last time you've touched your books to study.
Ooh, that like contradicts a lot of things you're taught in school, but okay.
Yeah. And so that you get a good night's sleep, your brain has a full day to do that processing. Mm-hmm. And that you take that day as a self-care day where you go, maybe, you know, you either, you know, go get a massage or you go out to lunch with a good friend or you, you know, just do stuff that makes you feel good, whatever mm-hmm. it is. And more people have had success using that time frame in large tests and things like that because, again, I think like you're, you know, the person told you, study really hard for those 2 hours, but then take a 2 hour and make sure to take a 2 hour nap. And I would argue that you'd need longer than a 2 hour nap is once you've studied, you really need a good, and that, like they say, a good night's sleep and a good breakfast before you go take a big test, right?
Right. Well, he was just saying 2 hours if you wanted to like keep like pot shining. He's like, you do. He's like, you need to hit REM for everything. He's like, there's something about REM that we just don't understand that it plays the biggest role in everything.
Yeah, they just still don't have enough data on the sleep thing. But sleep, self-care, stress, and stigma are the four silent S's underneath all of our health problems. And so even just if we worked on better sleep habits in general, better things about our sleep and stress, you know, we could be healthier.
That's so cool. Like that it's so simple, but it's the way you present it. It's so powerful.
It's simple, but it's very simple, but it's also challenging because we don't take the time for it. It has to be in your count. My self-care time mm-hmm. is in my calendar just as much as an appointment I have with someone.
That was actually something I was going to ask.
That's why it's an appointment with myself. And the only way that an appointment with myself can get changed is literally if somebody's dead or dying.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if I take one out just of, oh, well, I'll just move this one. Then it's going to happen again. It's going to happen again. And all of a sudden, you're not doing your self-care again. 6 months down the road, you realize, I'm not feeling as good as I did there for a while. I'm not feeling as positive. I'm not, you know, in that feeling of gratitude. All of the things come together. And it comes back to the sleep, stress, self-care, and stigma.
Wow. That's just, I'd love to cut it there. I just got a few going out questions for you.
Okay.
So during this lockdown time, what did you do to pass time other than like work? Was it Amazon, Netflix, podcasting, etc.?
Oh, the interesting thing is that prior to COVID, I was in the same routine I'm in today.
Interesting. So
the only difference is I was starting to go out to networking meetings in the community when COVID struck. And so those, I had literally just been to two meetings of a group. And so I reined that back in, and really I've been doing the same thing for the last 14 months, 16 months as I was doing the 16 months prior to that.
Just business as usual?
Business as usual, but I will say there are a few things that became new routines for my family and I.
Okay.
So some of the new routines that came in is every Tuesday is we wanted to support one of our favorite Mexican restaurants with, you know, cheap tacos, Taco Tuesday, and we'd get carrot, you know, we didn't want to we had started that, and we'd go there every Tuesday. Well, right, we decided for COVID, we'd just continue it and pick the tacos up. Okay. And so literally for almost every week, we've still done Taco Tuesday.
Awesome.
And then every Wednesday night, my brother's band played live on Facebook. So from 8 to 10 p.m., we would watch, and that has continued every week. So the two, and then Sunday mornings, we have a family Zoom call that is Kansas City, the Missouri area, Texas, Upper New York State, and Scotland. So that's cool. All of our family from those places, we all get on there at 11 a.m. Central. And every Sunday morning, we've talked to each other for a year, and we've gotten closer this year than we ever had been, the group of us. And so looking forward to the Tuesday tacos, Wednesday jam night, and Sunday family call has been what I've done differently, but everything else has been the same for me.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Then the last one is any tips or tricks for advice for people who want to walk in a similar path as you, kind of thing?
Create your goal close to your heart.
Okay.
Like we were talking about, put that on a piece of paper and read it, you know, make it an affirmation, and the universe will bring you people who help also believe in that same thing and also are supportive of you. And then just do the slow and steady thing, you know, the tortoise and the hare. Be the tortoise. Slow and steady, slow and steady. You will. And sometimes it's not slow and steady, but one foot in front of the other, slow and steady, and you will reach whatever goal you're going for yourself.
That's so wonderful. Thank you, Stacey. Yeah. That's
you
just
are
wonderful.
Very welcome.
I appreciate your time and just the insights we got from all this.
You are very welcome.
Well, congratulations. You made it to the end. You're an awesome person. Not many make it here. So, being the awesome person that you are, can you do me one more awesome favor? Can you rate and review this on whatever podcast services you're using? App, if you do it on Apple and you leave an actual written review, I have a thing on my website. I will take your written review and post it for all to see. Congratulations, you're permanently sealed on my site. Otherwise, I am trying to do YouTube more and live streaming. I will try to put as many of the YouTube links in the description of the show as I can. So give your boy some extra help over on YouTube. Watch my videos. I just mute it and change the channel, change the window or something. But yeah, that's it. Thank you for being awesome, and see you next time.